Kentucky, Sugi and Shas, and it's a huge Sugi and Chayshin Mishpat. That is, when is a Dayan, right? A Dayan, a Basin, a member of a Basin, Paskit, and it resulted in Ruvain having to pay money to Shimon. And then it turns out that the Dayan Paskit incorrectly. Now, how do, number one, how do you establish that? That's because we don't have an appeal system. But number two, let's say we do establish it. And let's say the guy who received the money is gone. He's disappeared. Is a Dayan chayav for the financial losses that were caused by his psak? So most of the time he's not. Most of the time there is what can be called judicial immunity. A Dayan on a Beis Din is not chayav for the hefsedim that were caused by an erroneous psak. The reason actually is that this is a tachanis chachamim, because otherwise people would be reluctant to be dayanim. But it's a very big sugya. It depends on the nature of the mistake. There are different types of mistakes once you make a mistake. There is a mistake that is called ta'a b'dvar mishnah. He didn't know a mishnah, which doesn't really mean a mishnah there. It means he was ignorant of a basic halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, in which there's no chalukah. So that's such a mistake that he might be chayav to pay. The other might be a mistake in which he wrongfully evaluated the different poskim. So in such a situation, he's not chayav to pay. But what the pasuk is saying is, even if bidei adam, you're not chayav to pay, but bidei shamayim, you're an aris kavod, and Hashem will hold you responsible for the losses you caused, unless hatia pas, you open up your hands and pay the money. Better for you to pay the money out of your own pocket than to be held accountable by a Kodesh Baruch Hu for a perversion of judgments, right? So that's the israpes, meaning correct the mistake by paying for it. Now, the teacher of Torah doesn't have the same responsibility, because since the teacher of Torah was just teaching halacha generally, he didn't specifically tell Reuven to give money to Shimon. He doesn't have that same responsibility, but his acharayah is to do tshuva, and tshuva requires kabbalah la'asit, and for that is rahav riyach. Rahav means, if your problem was the Torah you taught was inaccurate and it led to perversion of judgment, your acharayah is, make your friends, which are your talmidim, make them broader, wider, teach them more, be sure that they understand. In other words, the answer is pedagogical. If you find that your learning is causing people to make these mistakes, the achrayas is correct the way you teach. Rahav reyecha, give them a greater expansion. Rahav and rachav. Hey, in chazir, you're changing there. Rahav reyecha. So you see how the Gra is dividing it up. Leich yisrapeis is the tikkun for the dayan, and rahav reyecha is the tikkun for the melamed Torah. Now, then it says, be conscientious in doing this. Al tite shena li'enecha usnuma li'afata. Do not let sleep come to your eyes and slumber to your eyelids. So here again, the Gra is very consistent here. What is the difference between shena, which is sleep, and tenuma? Slumber was a type of sleep. So the Gra says, shena is when you're really asleep. So your conscious mind is not working. Tenuma is what Chazal call misnamnei. Misnamnei is a person who's drowsing. If you call him, he answers, but he doesn't really know how to use swords and the like, but he's partially awake. Now, the Gra says, inayim, eyes, refer not only to the external eye, but eye refers to your mind working well. But afapecher, the eyelids, which means when your eyelids are shut, your inner eye can still be working. You can still be thinking even when your eyes are shut. Sometimes a person indeed thinks when his eyes are shut. So the Vilna Gaon says the following. There is a difference between a dayan and a teacher of Torah in terms of what they need to be aware of. A dayan has to be aware of two things. A dayan has to know the Torah. But a Dayan also has to be sensitive to what's going on in the world, to understand who's lying, who's telling the truth. In other words, two Bali Dinim come in front of me, Reuben and Shimon. And Reuben has a Tanya and Shimon has a Tanya. Now, as an abstract psak, I would just have this on a piece of paper. So I would say, oh, the Shemar says this, the Ramah says this, the Shach says this, the Kso says this, I would have a psak. But a Dayan cannot just close his eyes and look at the piece of paper. The Dayan has to look at Reuben and see, get a chush. Is Reuben lying or is Reuben telling the truth? But this is a principle in Dayanis called Din Meruma, that even if Al Pi Din somebody's entitled to a psak, if the Dayan can tell that this guy is a liar, he's mechuyev to keep on being Derech Shechaker. Now, this is what we call the fifth chelik of Shulchan Aruch. Chazanish used to say that the fifth chelik of Shulchan Aruch was the most important portion of the Shulchan Aruch. That's the common sense that a person needs. And that's the meaning of the phrase that a Dayan is mechuyev to have a Din Emes La'amito, a judgment that is true to its truth. What's the lashon of Emes La'amito? So the Gemara himself says it is possible for a din to be the correct din, but it's not true in the facts of this particular case. Now a teacher of Torah is not adjudicating specific cases. So a teacher of Torah can talk about, if we're learning Gemara, okay, Reuben and Shimon, we talk about it in the abstract. Shoshana Gatsapara, we don't know who Reuben is, we don't know his reputation, we're just discussing the issue in the abstract. So, the only thing the teacher of Torah needs is, he needs his inner mental eye to be open, but he can close his eyelids. Eyelids is what you see the world around you. So, he is commanded, don't let sleep cloud your brain. The Dayan is commanded, don't let your eyelids cover up your ability to perceive the reality around you. Okay? And that's the difference. The teacher of Torah can focus on the abstractions of things, at least during the shiur. But the Dayan must focus on the reality in front of them. Therefore, the afapecha, the eyelids, refers to don't allow yourself to have your eyes covered in terms of the reality in front of you. And the teacher of Torah, keep your mind clear and focused. The Dayan, don't shut out the external environment. That's why it's a totally different talent. To be the, you know, Yosha was authentic to be both, but to be a Dayan is a different type of thing. Because it is not just knowing halacha, as difficult as that is. It also means human psychology, evaluating people, understanding who is a liar, who is not a liar, looking at the plausibility of something. And this is all built into the Shulchan Aruch Kufa. And the Shulchan Aruch says, a dayan is mechuyev to be sure that their din is not a din maruma. It's not a deceitful din, even with Al Pi Din, even with Eidim that way. You know, there's no din that Sanhedrin or Beis Din has to be makabel Eidim kasherim. Let's say Eidim come, and there's no psul in them. Like they're not kraven, they're not psulim. So there's no automatic reason to disqualify them. But a basis has the right to say, we don't trust you. Your story does not sound right. Because that's nichlal. Now that can be abused, obviously. If a dayan, of course, that's why if you believe in Hashem, you know, if a dayan is just saying, I like this guy, so I'm not going to accept the Eidim, the Dayan is going to be Nanash and Shemayim very, very severely. But if the Dayan, Alibi Diyemis, has a feeling that this person is not telling the truth, then he is not mechuyev to be Makabel. We feel it's a difference. The basin feels it's a different room, and we're not going to be Makabel. You know? Now hopefully they'll be able to articulate those reasons. Usually it's more than just saying, I feel you're a liar. There has to be some reasons why you feel that way. And that is what the Gemara is saying. It's not enough for the Dayan to know the halacha. The Dayan has to be aware of the Messias to be in the world. And they tell a story about, actually I'll tell you two stories. The first story is not so gay, but it's a little bit gay about a rabbi who makes a mistake in psak that he can be accountable for. This was a story about Ravitzah Pachanim. I think I may have mentioned it in one of our sessions, but Rizal Hanan was the, again, he's not one we talked about in the Yeshiva world, but Rizal Hanan was in the end of the 19th century, and he really was acknowledged universally as the Gadol Hador of Pesach HaLotah. This wasn't the generation of Rav Chaim and the Or Sameach, but the Posek Hador was Rav Yitzchak Rav Chaim. Akidei Kach, that legend has it, I'm not sure if it's true, that Rav Chaim used to send shaylos to Rav Yitzchak Rav Chaim and would always tell him, just give me the Pesach, do not give me any reasons at all. But if you gave me reasons among this, you know, I would argue with them and I would see it differently. But I know that even if your lundus is wrong, your psak is right, because you are the posek of the Shvar who will give you siyata dishmaya to be machabin to the Emes. So the story goes that Rav Yitzchak, why he was named after Rav Yitzchak Chanan, she was Rav Yitzchak Chanan. So the story goes that he once got a telegram from the city, a letter from the city, asking him like a relatively routine shiloh about an animal that was trained from him, whatever it is. I mean, it's not the type of thing you would go to the Gadol Hador. And the Rav Chanan was wondering, why are they sending me the shiloh? They have a young rab that they recently got. So he made a whole cheshbon like this. It must be that this young rab has enemies that are out there. And they asked him this shiloh, and he made a mistake. And now they want me to correct the psak, and then they can use it against him and get rid of him. They say, look, you made a mistake. But I can't do that. If a person makes a mistake, he shouldn't lose his job. So listen to what Rav Chanan did. On one hand, I have to correct the mistake. The Rav mocked at something that's us. So this is what he did. He wrote a letter that said it's mutter. And he sent it by regular mail. He then sent a telegram that says, the letter I sent you, I said it was mutter, but it was a big mistake. I misunderstood the chorus. Please ignore the letter that you'll get from Allah is that it's us. So look at the brilliance of this. They get the telegram first, so they and it's us. They can't use it against the Rav, because Rav Chanan's own original psak was a mutter, and he made a mistake. So that way, what can they say to the Rav? He made a mistake. The Gadol Hador made a mistake, too. So, first of all, the whole story is correct. This is exactly what happened. And Yitzchak Chanan was willing to be Mavaza himself. Because after all, he made a mistake with something that was obvious. But he was willing to be Mavaza himself. That Rav should not suffer such a result. Very, very fascinating. So, number one, it's fascinating about how his common sense was so powerful that he could reconstruct the whole story just from this. And then his meetups in terms of what he was willing to do.
Is the Rebbe
well, that's an issue. That's an issue. But on the other hand, you know, maybe he's not a Bizonian. He could say, you know, he made a mistake. He could say, well, I thought this. He probably gave some. The young man probably also had some reason. You know, for the
right.
Yeah. Another thing about Mivad, it reminds me of Rav Chaim Meijer. They say this. Rav Chaim Meijer was really kind of the Gadol of the next door. Psak. Rav Chaim Meijer was the Posek Hador. Chavetz Chaim was not. Chavetz Chaim was a great, great Gadol. Rav Chaim Meijer was the Posek Hador. So, Rav Chaim Meijer had a phenomenal memory. He had a phenomenal memory from the time he was a child. At his bar mitzvah, instead of giving a Dvar Torah, he just said, he would recite the Ketzais and the Sivas by heart. That's why these people wanted to hear that. Okay. So it's not just an issue of memory, it's also an issue of Havana and Tfisa. Just amazing, amazing things. So there was a Rav in Montreal, maybe you heard of him. He was nifter around 10 years ago. Rav Hirschbrand. Rav Hirschbrand was also a person who knew Bavli Yerushalmi, and he was a tremendous, great Kiyam of the generation. So when he was a young Bachar, he went to see Rav Chaim Moser, and he already was a great Rebbe. And Rav Chaim Moser said over Gemara and Taisus, and he said something of Nazir. And Rav Hirschbrand, you know, piped up. He said he gave him that was a lot of head. No, it's not that bad. It's not that. And Rav Hirschbrand once said wanted to run to the Svarim shelf to show. And Rav Chaim Moser said, no, don't worry. You know, you're probably right. You know, I'm getting older. My memory's not. Then afterwards, they pulled out the Gemara. Rav Chaim Moser was like the first one was wrong. But Rav Chaim Moser didn't want the young Bacher to be embarrassed. He had to run That's my number. I just got it. So these were the meters of these development concepts to be aware of. It wasn't only their absolute brilliance and hasmada, but also the meters focus that they had. Okay. But be this today, the shame on the tomb is a very, very good point, and that is, in the world of Psak Halacha in particular, it is not just the halacha that you need to know, but you also need to know the mitzvahs. You need to know. And of course, it's not just the Dini Mamas. The MS is the same thing as everything. Hilchos Shabbos, remember Hilchos Shabbos. And you're talking about refrigerators, compressors. Now, a person can know all of the lundas of Rama and Psak Reisha, but if he doesn't know how a refrigerator works, and he makes wrong assumptions, the Psak is not going to be correct. The halacha is going to be MS. But the Psak is going to be incorrect because the Mitzias is not understood. And that's true in medical ethics, it's true in everything. That you have to know both the Halacha and you have to know the Mitzias upon which the Halacha is nikkah. Okay. Yeah. So this is Begra's understanding of all of these different Halachim, that the discussion of the Arev Stam and the Arev Kabla are referring to the achrayas of a teacher of Torah and the achrayas of a dayan for the negative consequences of their teaching. And the lesson, therefore, is to be matun, to be patient, to be deliberate, to be slow enough to be sure that Talmidim understands and the like. And one should not leave Talmidim with a lack of clarity if it's shaykh, the rebbe, or the dayan to be misake.
Since it's on this topic, can you explain there was a story of someone who went to study the Mitzvahs, I don't know, animals, and the halacha should be like him or not be like him. Can you explain that?
The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Rav spent 6 months in the field with farmers, it's not sure they were Goyim farmers, to learn to be makir animal anatomy, so he could determine what types of blemishes were permanent and what types of blemishes were temporary for a bechor. This is relevant. Now, Rav, of course, lived after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, so there were no korbanos. But there is one area of halacha which in this very day, mumin are relevant, and that is a bechor. If I have a firstborn kosher animal born in my flock, a male animal, so whether it's a calf or a goat or a sheep, a ram, halacha is, it is kadosh. That's why we try to avoid that, because it's very difficult to have a kadosh bechor in your flock, because you're not allowed to share it, you're not allowed to work with it, you're not allowed to milk it. So what we do practically is we sell the ear of its mother when it's pregnant to a goy. So the Mishnah says that any animal that is born from a mother that is a shutfus of a goy and a Jew does not have kedushas bechor. So we sell the ear, we sell a little insignificant. We don't want to sell a real part of the animal because then the guy will get some of the profits. But we sell an insignificant part of the animal. But I'll leave it to the MS. If somebody messed up and did not sell the mother, you got yourself a bechor. You got yourself a korban. Even as much as that. And the only eitzah is that when the korban gets a mum, you're not allowed to give it a mum, but if it gets a mum accidentally, it is now chulin. It doesn't have to be redeemed. The bechor does not have to be redeemed. But it still belongs to a kohen. It is then given to a kohen, and the kohen can have it shechted, and the meat can be eaten. By the way, the meat can be eaten by non-kohen as well. In other words, it's not kadosh once it has a mum. Rather, what happens is, it's mum and kohen, it's chulin, the kohen can donate it to a yeshiva, whatever it would be. It's very different than other korbanos. Other korbanos that have a mum have to be redeemed, and they still have a certain amount of kedusha. A bechor does not have to be redeemed. Once it gets a mum, it is chulin gemurin, but it is mama kohen. So even today, you'd have to know what type of blemish. This is only if it's a blemish that can't heal, a blemish that could heal, etc. It's not true as a bechor. So Rav spent 6 months to understand the anatomy of animals, just so he would be able to posture on the movement of a bechor. And you could call that bittul Torah, but once again, it was a chachma that he needed to be able to posture. And indeed, that is one of the reasons why when it comes to matters of Isser v'Heter, halacha k'rab b'Yisurin, because you see Rav put in all of that effort to be sure that whether something was mutter or something was usher, and it was that example of that effort that was, I don't know if that's what you referred to, but yeah, that's why the halacha is like Rav b'Yisurin. Okay. Now the next part of the Mishlei is, the next verse is one of the most famous verses. It's actually famous even in Christianity. It's a very famous Bible verse. That is Lech el Namala Asel, which is translated in the King James Version, go to the ant, thy sluggard. What's the word?
Sluggard,
right. Go to the ant, thy sluggard. Okay. Sluggard, right. It's a very, very famous verse. And here, Shlomo HaMelech is telling us again, let's just read it, Pashat Pshat first, and then the Gra will add some things. Although the Gra's Pshat is not as radical a deviation as the first part, right? The first Pshat we read is a major, major change. He's moving from guarantors and loans to teachers of Torah and Dayanim. Here, it's not going to be such a radical change, but still the Gra will add some things. But Shlomo HaMelech is now talking about the importance of being industrious, not being lazy, that in order to accomplish important things in life, you need, as it were, to keep on working. And here he points out that we can learn Chachma by looking at animals. And the Gemara in Erevin makes that point as well. It says that even if the Torah would not have been given, we could learn modesty from a chasul, from a cat, the way a cat goes up to the corner to preen itself, and maybe the cats here are not necessarily so modest, and the like. And Shlomo HaMelech is saying, you can learn from an ant the virtue of industriousness. What does it say? Go to the ant, lazy person. Riei Jerachah, look at her ways. For some reason, although ants are obviously male and female, but the word namala is a female word, and therefore we say, look at her ways. V'chakam, and become wise. Again, it's an important lesson. Looking at the way certain animals behave can teach you chachma. What is so great about the ant? Asher ein lo katsin shoter u'moshel. The ant does not have, again, katsin, shoter, moshel, the Gra will give us differentiations, but it basically means the ants have no boss. There is no supervisor. There is no overseer. There is no taskmaster. There is no one that makes the ants do what they do. They do it out of instinct. And yet, what does it do? Tochin b'kayetz lachma, agra b'kotzir machana. She prepares in the summer her bread for the winter, because once again, in the winter, there are no crops. So how does an ant live in the winter? That in the summer, it takes grains, little kernels of grain and little bits of leaves, and puts it in its ant colonies, puts it in its underground subterranean chambers. The Gra brings a medrash that says they once looked in one of these ant places, and there were like 300 core of grain that were stored up. That's from the Yekuzma, but they used a huge amount of grain. So basically, what does the ant do? The ant, again, because of instinct, we're not saying the ant itself is a chacham, but the ant behaves in a wise way, albeit out of instinct. Because the ant looks at the summer. In the summer, there's plenty of grain, plenty of stuff. So the ant might as well eat and enjoy, eat, drink, and be merry. Right? And you can assume it'll always be that way. But what does the ant do? The ant knows that right now there's a lot of stuff, but later there's going to be nothing. So the ant works very hard right now to store up for what it will need later. You don't just live in the moment, but you have to make a judgment about the future. And the ant prepares its bread in the kayetz in the summer. Agra b'kotzir ma'chala. It gathers during the harvest what it will eat later. And therefore Shlomo HaMelech's message is to his son, don't just assume that the good times that you have now, if they're prosperous, will always last, but make provision for the future. And then it goes on and says, Ad masai otzel tishkav, how long will a lazy person, will you lie in bed? Masai Toko Ishmasacha, when will you get up from your slumber? Ma'at Shenos, a little bit of sleep. Ma'at Tenumos, a little bit of slumbering. Ma'at Chibuk Yadayim Lishkov, a little bit of clasping your hands together as if I don't have to move. And what will happen? Uvok Emahalech Reishechem. Your poverty will come like an uninvited guest. Umachsarcha, and your loss, ki ishma gain, like an armed robber. Meaning, all of these things will sneak up. Magain is a man with a shield, an aggressor. Meaning to say, laziness can have bad consequences. One has to be industrious. Now again, the Gra basically takes this pasuk to mean exactly that. But as you would expect, the message is referring more to Torah learning and Avodas Hashem, as opposed to putting money in your bank account and the like. And he says the following. He says that in Avodas Hashem, there are three areas that we need to work on generally. There is what is called Chochmah, the wisdom of the Torah. We need to learn Torah. We need to get wisdom. We need to absorb the knowledge of the Torah. There is midah. We need to perfect our character traits, right? To become less arrogant, to become more giving, more generous, etc. And then there's the actual mice and tiger. There's the actual good deeds, the mitzvahs that we do, right? There is chachma. There is midah. There is mice and tiger. And the ant exemplifies on an instinctual level all three levels. In fact, that's what he says. He says, go to the ant Otzel. Otzel, a lazy person, is a person who doesn't do Masim Tayyib. Re'ei Jiracha, look at her ways, which are her midas, the chatam, and look at her chacham. So the ant had, again, we understand it's instinctual. We're not actually attributing these qualities to the ant. But the ant behaves in a way that seems to indicate both Masim, industriousness, Midas and Chochmah. Now, the industriousness is the most obvious because the ant is constantly carrying things, right? And the ant can't carry things. You know, what do they say? The ant is disproportionately strong. The amount of weight, an ant can carry like 1,000 times its weight. It's an amazing thing. An ant carries a kernel of grain, or it might be much, much more than the ant weighs. That's what I think one of the, if I remember from my ancient youth, one of the superheroes of the Superman genre, some of them Ant-Man, somehow he had the strength of an ant or something. Like, if you had a human having the strength of an ant, you could lift, you know, lift buildings and the like. So the first thing about the ant is its industriousness. It's working. That's my subtitle. What it does, it's always doing. Now the second is midos. Where do you see good midos in an ant? So the Gra brings a medrash that ants do not steal the food of other ants. Now, of course, they steal food of humans, but okay. I don't know why. Okay, but he says the following. He says that an ant colony once came across some abandoned ants, and when they smelled it, and they could smell from the rayon that it belonged to another ant colony, they would not touch it. So that's midas, right? They don't take other people's, not other people, other ants' property. That's midas. And chokhmah, the Medrash tells us, is exemplified by the way they store things. Apparently, they actually dig three holes, one on top of the other, and they store things in the middle hole because the top area might get wet from surface moisture, the bottom area could get wet from water table. Therefore, they have these two compartments that insulate the middle compartment from water damage or water invasion. So the ant exemplifies industriousness, good character, and chachma. Again, on an instinctual level, these are the behaviors that the ant has, and therefore the pasuk says, learn from the ant all three of them. And then the Gra goes on and says, it doesn't have a katsir, shoter, moshel. Now these are three words for supervisor or boss. But the Gra says specifically that the word katsin is the term we use for one who teaches you chachma. A shoter is one, like a policeman, like we talk about shoftim v'shaikim, a shoter is the person who forces you to do what the Beis Din orders you to do. So that's maisim tayim. If the Beis Din ordered you, or even, you know, if you didn't sit to build a sukkah, right, so it'll make you build a sukkah. So the shoter is maisim tayim. And the mosheel refers to the internal process, right? Ezeo gibor hakovesh yisitro, or mosheel v'rucho. That's when I conquer my Yetzirah to build up my midos tovos, right? So the ant does not have a katsin for chachma, does not have a shoter for masin tovim, and does not have a mosheel to help it develop midos tovos, and yet the ant has all three of those types of behaviors. So the Gemara then says a nice little drush. He says that Eliezer Eben Avram is called Ben Meshech Beisi Hu Eliezer Damesek. It's a biblical pun. That when Avram says to Hashem, when Hashem tells Avram, I'm going to give you so much, and Avram says, Ma titei li, what can you give me that's worth anything? Anechi holei chariri, I'm going to die without children. Ben Meshech Beisi, and the one that is in charge of my home is Damesek Eliezer, Eliezer from Damascus. And he's going to yarshin everything. He's my Talmud, but he's not my son. Right? So Ben Meshech Beisi means the one that, again, it's a pun because it's the same three letters, Damesek. But the Gra says, Meshech is Rosh Tevos, Moshel, Shoter, Kitzit. Meshech. Moshe, that Eliezer's role in Avram's house, vis-a-vis the other servants, was he was a Moshel to be sure that people behaved in refined ways in terms of midos. Shoter, that people did what they had to do in Meisim. And Kitzin, he was a teacher of Chachma and Torah, whatever that meant there. Right? So Meshech is Moshel, Shoter, the Kitzin. Okay. Now why the order there is Moshel, Shoter, Katsin, here it's Katsin, Shoter, Moshel. I'm not sure, unless Avram wanted to give us a pun with Damesek. That's Mamshel. But that's what the verse is. Okay. Now, he then goes on and says, the next pasuk, when it describes the ant, it says, she prepares in the summer her bread. She gathers in the harvest her food. So first of all, it's important to understand that kayas and katsir are not synonyms. We use kayas in modern times to mean summer. But kayas is after katsir. The season of, well, actually, it actually does correspond to summer. That is, the katsir is actually in the spring. Right? The harvest begins Pesach time, and the barley harvest. And the final harvest is Rosh Chodesh. That's why it's called the wheat harvest. So katsir is in the spring. Now kayetz refers to kayetz ta'inim, which means after they would harvest the fruits, or the figs in particular, they would leave figs in the field to dry out. That's called kayetz ta'inim. And they would not gather them in until Sukkot time, which is why Sukkot is called Chag HaAsiv, the season of the ingathering. So it's important to know that Kayetz and Katsir are two different seasons. First is Katsir, then is Kayetz. Now, another thing is, Lachma, Tochin Lachma. So in the Kayetz, she prepares her bread, but in the katsir, she gathers her food. So the Rambam says, actually, you have to look at it reversed. We'll see why it's written in this order. And that is, in the harvest season, all the ant does is gather, 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 gather. Now apparently, I don't know what process the girl is referring to. Apparently, just as human beings, when we gather wheat kernels, harvest wheat, we gotta grind it down into flour and then bake it into bread. Apparently there's a certain amount of processing ants do. they make their grain into leaven. So in the harvest season, all the ant does is gather. It does not make it into lechem until the kayitz. Okay? So in the katsir, its job is to gather. In the kayitz, it takes what it gathers and makes it into lechem. Now, I obviously don't know what process that even is, but let's just accept that that's what happens. So the Gra says, what is the mushroom here? The mushroom is how a person learns Torah. When a person is young, how do you define young? That's a question. Their main job is to gather, learn as much Torah as they can, take in as much knowledge as they can. Okay? Not necessarily fully understanding it, not fully digesting it. And when you have a lot of Torah knowledge, you can then grind it into flour and make it into bread, and then you'll see the connections and you'll see the depth and you'll understand it. Because you kind of say, I'm not going to go to the next line until I get this first line. But all you have is one line. Sometimes you have to kind of say, okay, I don't understand this yet, but I'm going to go on. Now again, I do want to point out, there are two different ways you don't understand something, and it's important to not understand things in the right way. Right? Understanding things in the right way is the best metric, but the second best is to not understand in the right way. Because there is the not understanding in which I'm just confused, I don't know what this is saying. That's not good. You've got to stay with it until you know what it says. When you know what it says, but it doesn't make sense to you, or it seems to contradict other things, then you can say, I have a kasha, and write it down in a notebook. But I'm going to go on for a while. Because you at least know what it is you don't know. If you read a Tosfos, and Tosfos brings three proofs of something, and you don't understand the third proof. You know what Tosfos says, you don't understand the third, then you can say, I have a kasha, the third proof doesn't fit. Anyway, the point I'm making is, it's very important to have clarity as to what it is you don't understand. And once you have clarity as to what it is you don't understand, you do have a certain freedom to go on. Because I know exactly, when I leave this sugya, I don't understand something. And the idea is, and again, it's not something you're sharing to, because you can learn a Tosfos, or a Rashba, or a Gemara, and your first feeling could be, I'm just totally confused. But then, if you think about it some more, you can say, well, there are 5 points from this I can take out. Meaning, I'm not totally confused. There are, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that I do know from here. What do I know? What don't I know? That's very important. If you can say what I do know, what I don't know, you're ready to go on. And the Gra is suggesting it's even desirable to go on. Because often, questions answer themselves as you acquire more Torah. Sometimes, I remember you see this happened to me many times. A burning kasha that I couldn't go on, you know, on that base. The Gemara asked it on that both, you know, okay, you know, it's there. It's just there. It wasn't like anything sophisticated, like, you know, I was mechaber to the Kesedis. I was mechaber to the Gemara. You know. But the point basically is, if I would simply say, I'm not going to go on until I enter this kasha, I would work on it, work, you know, what would the purpose be for that? So the Gra is saying, the ant does not spend its time processing all the information, making the bread. In the harvest, gather it up. And then when you're older, and the truth of the matter is, the mind works that way as well, because the emesis, memory is a faculty that does decline with age. Analytical ability might get better with age, because you have a deeper experience. So the truth is, the time to get a lot of ideas is when you're young. Same thing with anything involving memorization. If you want to be a Balkoli, nice thing to be a Balkoli. Do it when you're young. You know, doing it, because once you hit 20, you're almost too old to do that job very efficiently. So that's what it is. If you want to read the Torah. It's a nice skill to have. I don't mean to suggest 1 through 20 is impossible. I'm saying certainly you could. But even at the age of 20, it's not as easy as when you're 15. I mean, that certain types of memory are just better when you're younger. So the Gemara is telling us how Hadrach here, right? And the Gemara knew of what he taught. And of course, in a sense, none of this applied to the Vilna Gaon himself. I mean, he knew everything at a young age. He was able to analyze everything at a young age. But he's giving us a Hadrachah that one should spend a lot of time getting a lot of knowledge of Torah. And then, when it comes to the Kayas, the latter years of life, because he doesn't tell us when that is, then you're able to grind it up and digest it. And this is the meaning of the phrase in Pirkei Avos, Imein Kemach Ein Torah, Imein Torah Ein Kemach. Now literally that means if there's no flower, there's no Torah. If there's no Torah, there's no flower. Now most Mefarshim understand this totally different than the Gemara. Most Mefarshim understand Kemach refers to the economic activity that you need to put food on the table. Actually, this would be an argument that parents would use if the kids have to go to college. The parents would say, Imein Kemach Ein Torah. If you don't have flour, you don't have bread on the table, you won't be able to learn Torah. Now, granted, Imein Torah Ein Kemach. Without Torah, all of the flour is worthless. But you need Kemach for that to be Torah. So most people should understand it that way, that Kemach refers to the ishtadlus of economic activity. You need it to be able to learn. But the Gemara is not that way. The Gemara learns totally differently. Kemach refers to taking your Torah knowledge and analyzing it, grinding it up fine to understand it and apply it. So he says, Imein Torah in Kemach. If you don't have a lot of Torah, you're not going to have anything to grind up. What are you going to do? Take the two halachas you know and grind them up finely? Not a lot there. You need a lot of Torah to make flour. On the other hand, Imein Kemach Ein Torah, meaning if you learned a lot of Torah, but you left it superficial, without grinding it into flour, then you don't really have Torah either, because ultimately you have to understand. And that's it. So according to the Gemara, it's expressing this idea that you need to know a lot, then you need to work to understand it, but now Pirkei Avos doesn't indicate the sequence of them. Here, the Pasuk, the way the Gemara interprets it, is indicating that you start with amassing a lot of information. This is the great thing about systems like the Zimmerman system. You've all heard about that. They do it in some Chadorim. In Yerushalayim, they try it in Muncie. It hasn't taken off in America that much yet. Even in Israel, not that many people. And it's hard for me to understand why everybody doesn't do it. It just seems so poshut and so good. That is, they really just follow Pirkei Avos, in which for 5 years, from 5 to 10, is your finish of Tanakh. And then they do Mishnah from 10 to 15. They don't even do Gemara. They know Mishnah is there. One of the very pities is naturally the Talmud there. You're just Mishnah, it's everything. So by the time they start Gemara, so they start Gemara much later than everybody else. 15, they start Gemara, and they're just, well, kids start Gemara at 7, or I don't know, what, at 8. But by the time they do Gemara, they have the ideas of not just Chumash, but all of Tanakh, Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu, it's one that people don't learn, you know, even if they're in Kollel. And they have Mishnah. Imagine if a person had a basic idea. Now, he didn't know everything. He didn't know the art scroll, you know, every single commentary on the Mishnah. You know. But let's say if a person had a basic understanding of Mishnah, you know, you might not, you know, you can't imagine how that would be easier to get into. You just have the basic building blocks for what the Gemara is talking about. I mean, how many times in Iran we make a lady like that Gemara that we got to spend time figuring out the Mishnah that's being quoted, you know, Bryce or a Mishnah, because we don't know that Mishnah, we don't know the context of it, and everything else. So that's what the Gemara is saying. Get your ideas. You can have the idea even without knowing the reason. You can know what a Mishnah says, even if you don't know the exact reason. And then as you learn, be in, you'll then understand things that you already know. But then they'll make sense. Right? So this is the idea of gathering in the harvest the grain and then making it bread in the kayas. That's making it kemach and the like. Now, he gives another expression. He says, this is the meaning of an expression too. A pejorative expression, which is all used, that sometimes when somebody didn't understand the halacha correctly, there's an expression in the Gemara, lai chash lekimche, you didn't pay attention to your flour. Lo chash lekimche. The Gemara says that's exactly it. Because if kemach is digesting, grinding the grain, so it's edible and palatable, and it refers to Havana. So if somebody's understanding of Torah is weak and defective, they didn't pay enough attention to getting it into the right flour. They didn't grind it enough into flour. Or there's another expression that when a Rebbe said something that wasn't right, he would sometimes be described as a cutter of reeds. Katzio kani bi'agma. So he says, a cutter of reeds, like this. We can apply the same metaphor to grain and flour to wood and firewood. Right? A person cuts big logs. From big logs, you can cut a lot of kindling for a big fire. Or you take a big log, and then you cut it down. But if the log you cut with chatchila is just a reed, you're not going to be able to get a fire out of the reed. So he says that normally, again, this is just switching the metaphor, from grain to flour, you can go from a big log that you chop into kindling for a fire. So once again, you have to chop the kindling, but only if you have a big log will you get a fire. So a person who doesn't have a lot of Torah, the same way the Chosh Lekimcha can refer to a big bucky who doesn't understand well, Kato Kami Biadma refers to a person who might have a very good sense of Ion, but hasn't learned a lot. He hasn't cut a big enough log to make a fire out of it. Okay, so again, you could apply how this applies to the Derech of Yeshivas. I don't want to talk about this because I want to keep on being modest, but it does emphasize Gaur's emphasizing the need to try to get a very, very strong foundation idea in Torah. Very, very good. Because without ideas, it's good to have a run, of course, and that's the ultimate goal, is to understand. But if you understand only a few things that you know, so really, you haven't accomplished a lot in terms of your ideas. Now, again, though, remember that our comparison to the ant is on four levels. We are not just talking about Chachma, which is Torah. We are also talking about Masim Tovim, and we're talking about Midos. Right? So this pasuk we just read is about Chachma, but again, it then talks about how long will the lazy man lie in bed? So again, that's the metaphor for the person who doesn't do Masim Tovim. Masai Toko Mishnasecha. When will you get up from your sleep? That means to work on your midos, because when a person allows the midos rose to take him over, he's sleepwalking through life, as it were. And then the pasuk is saying, now pasuk yidalev, I just want to say the Gemara interprets it totally differently. According to Rashi, if you look at pasuk yud and pasuk yidalev together, according to Rashi, Yud and Yud Aleph are negative verses, meaning a little bit of sleep is actually sarcastic. That means you sleep a lot. Oh, that little bit of sleep you're doing, that little bit of slumber, that little bit of clasping your hands, that's going to result in poverty and deprivation attacking you. So according to Rashi, Yud and Yud Aleph are negative psukim, meaning a little bit, sarcastically speaking, your laziness is going to cause bad things to happen to you. The Gra learns that Yud and Yud Aleph are positive. By keeping your sleep to a minimum, by reducing your slumber, by reducing your inactivity, good things are going to happen. Tosek Yud Aleph is a good thing that's going to happen to you. And the way he interprets it is as follows. Rashecha, your poverty, that which you lack will come to you, be mashlim, meaning you're missing something, what you're missing will come to you. Umachsorcha, that which you lack will come to you, kishra gay. So let me explain this. But the point is, interpretively, it is referring to a good thing coming to you. That which you lack will come back to you. And he says the following. He says, Mahalech is a slow walker. I'm not a Mahalech. I walk towards you. I walk slowly. Ishmael is not abandoned. It's a person who wants to protect me. But if somebody sees I'm in danger, they're going to run. So he says the following. He says that there's a certain anhaga of mida connected mida. If I desire to do mitzvahs, as opposed to being lazy, Hashem will give me opportunities to do mitzvahs. And that's called mahalech. That which I'm lacking, the mitzvahs that I'm not able to do, Hashem will give me opportunities. But that's called slow walking, because the reason is, mitzvahs have certain zman, meaning it's not going to, in other words, it's not going to happen all the time. Meaning, a lulav is only taken during sukkahs, right, etc. So it'll walk towards you for the proper times. Machsor refers to my desire to learn Torah. That if I was deprived of an opportunity to learn Torah, but I've now decided not to be lazy, it'll be like a protector. Now a protector runs towards me. And that's a remez that Torah is accessible every single moment. And that's why the machsor, I'm sorry, the reishacha, which is Masi Tovin, is described as a mahalech. The machsor, which is Torah, is described as an Ishmael game, because he'll come to me right away. As soon as I open my heart to want to learn Torah, Hashem will give me opportunities to learn Torah. Okay, so this is totally different than Rashi, because according to this, Rashi learns the Ishmael game as the armored man who is going to hurt me. He says, no, this is the Torah that's there to protect me, and it will come because Ma'at. Not because sarcastically I keep on sleeping, but rather by reducing that laziness, Hashem will give me the siyata Ishmael.